The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Hello, I'm Timothy Harvey, and I am sitting across the room. It's very far across the room. Does your dog bite?
from Mr. That's not my dog.
Mr. Jason Hunt.
Hello.
And we are once again here with your weekly episode of H2O.
You know, and I'm still finding it surprising, I guess, on some levels, that we've had the stamina to keep doing this every week.
Well,
at some point, you know, somebody's got to get sick, or something's going to happen, and they said we're going to break our streak. And I'm like, we're just around the corner from 75 episodes.
Well, I think we've had somewhere, you know, somebody has filled in for
yeah,
the
but
other
those
one,
yeah, but those were planned, and you know, we knew that was coming, but you know, it's just, you know, at some point our luck's going to turn. It's just like, what do you mean we can't record this week? What? Wait, we have obligations.
Yeah, well, and I think that we. Part of it is we just enjoy it. I mean, that's a plus, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The fact
well, it's an excuse to drink coffee.
Well, that's true. We don't need an excuse to drink coffee, but I mean, no, it's a fun thing. We actually enjoy what we do, you know, it's generally speaking, tend to find each other relatively decent company. Yes. Oh, we pretend to.
Because you're an actor.
Because we just tolerate each other.
Yeah. Call me pinko liberal.
Exactly. yeah.
Did you see the Bloom County in color?
Oh, God. You know what, folks?
And then Binkley, the anxiety closet, Binkley's anxiety closet. It's all that.
It's all back. This is a golden age in which we live. there are so many, you know, for all the times that you and I have sat there and talked about, you know, folks not being original or retreading ground that they don't need to retread. When somebody brings something back, when the creator of something brings something back and gets it right, it is a cause for celebration. The new Mad Max movie,
yep.
You know, the Return of Bloom County. These are the original creators going back to tell new stories in the world they created, and they are very far apart. Although I would love to see Opus in a Mad Max parody, that would just be awesome.
I'm still waiting for the explanation on how Opus could wake up 25 years later, and the kids are all the same age.
Do not stare directly.
But Cutter John showed up, and he's gray hair.
Do not stare directly. But Cutter John's a Vietnam vet.
I know, but if time has stayed still for the kids,
why
wouldn't it stand still for everybody else? Just pick up where left
how
off?
We have a cat named Bill
running for president. Bill, the cat for president.
Who, you know what? Considering the sheer number of people who are running again in 2016, he might as well just join the race.
Dayton Ward, who writes Star Trek books. He posted on his Facebook the other day that he's apparently still got his copy of the Billy and the Boingers single. Do you remember when they did that?
Uh-huh. In fact, I may still have a copy of that.
I was wondering, because I was thinking I had one somewhere. I have to go back and look at my 45s. I may have one, too. I didn't even think about that until he mentioned it. I thought, I wonder, because I've got about 400... 45s singles.
Hey, you know what? Here's one of those things that we don't actually have to explain it to the kids at home.
What?
Because vinyl came back.
Yeah, but singles haven't.
Doesn't matter.
Albums are there, but
you can still find 45s in the record stores. I mean, they're still out there too. So
yeah.
I'm just saying that it's, you know, it's one of those moments.
One of the few things we don't have to explain.
We are making a reference to something that is ancient tech.
Yeah.
Ancient.
Yeah.
And that's, again, it boggles the mind just how not ancient.
Did you see the photograph? There's a photograph running around the internet right now.
I'm sure there is.
Yeah. It's from the IBM archives, I think.
Okay.
You've got a five megabyte
drive. Yeah.
It's being transported, and it takes five men to move it. It is that big and heavy and clunky.
Oh, yeah. Well, but again, you know,
how many megs do you have? How many gigs are on our smartphones now?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, it's it bears reminding oneself periodically that the cell phones in our pocket are more powerful than the computers that put us on the moon.
We never went to the moon. That was a hoax. It's just like we never went to Pluto.
Okay. Capricorn 1 is not a documentary. And for you kids at home, Capricorn 1 is a seriously not very good B movie. But it was entertaining at the time. It's like watching... it's like watching Hangar 18. Remember Hangar 18?
Oh, yeah. I loved Hangar 18. I thought it was so much fun. Hangar 18 was a fun movie.
It's not a good movie.
It's all right.
No, but it's not for what it is.
It's
for what it is.
It's not a blockbuster hit.
One of these days we need to do a show about the really terrible movies we love.
Yeah.
The ones that are just... Because, I mean, I could go for a whole easily for 45 minutes about Deep Rising, which is the the best bad horror film... I mean, it's got Treat Williams in it.
And was that an underwater?
Well, it's on a cruise ship.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
And yeah.
Monster movie.
Yeah, Treat Williams and Famke Jensen.
No.
And it's the bad movie I was always hoping we'd get a sequel.
Mm. I was looking at we did the story on Simon Kinberg coming on board the new Logan's Run.
Mm-hmm.
Attempt. We're not going to call it a remake yet. It's
oh yeah, well,
it's stumbling toward the finish line.
Yeah, exactly. Whose version? They've been trying to make that movie for a long time now.
Yeah, and I didn't remember that Farrah Fawcett was in.
Oh yeah,
the original movie.
Mm-hmm.
That somehow has just escaped my brain all these years. That's a terrible
shame.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, Farrah Fawcett escaping my brain. That's what I'm saying.
It's like clearly...
Who would be the modern-day equivalent of Farrah Fawcett?
Oh, goodness. Well, no, I don't know if we would have one, because you've got the way... Stars are different now. I mean, in many ways, we're past that... I don't want to use cult of personality, but cult of personality is kind of the best way to describe it.
No, it is.
Because you wouldn't... I mean, because... You know, think about it. Farrah Fawcett's biggest claim to fame was a poster.
Yeah.
I mean, Charlie's Angels.
Well, didn't the poster get her the Charlie's Angels? Get the other?
Right. But, yep. I mean, Charlie's Angels was not, you know.
Yeah.
There was not much there. A bunch of pretty girls.
I think one of her first acting gigs was the nurse on $6 Million Man.
And she was married to Lee Majors
at the time.
And it turns out she was actually a really good actress, given the right material.
Yeah.
Remember when The Burning Bed came out?
Mm. Yeah, that was something.
And you were not expecting it.
No.
She turned out to be a pretty talented lady who was very much considered to be a bubble-headed beach blonde.
Oh, sure.
Because she kind of played a bubble-headed beach blonde most of the time. But
yeah. Well, it's like Suzanne Summers.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing. Or Lonnie Anderson.
Yeah. So it's a different time. I don't even know if we'd have somebody equivalent to that anymore.
Did you see the comments that Michael Douglas made on the Ant-Man press junket? I don't know if it was at San Diego or not.
Oh, no. What did he say?
But he was talking about the fact that one of the reasons why, and he was lamenting the fact that that so many American roles, American characters are being played by British and Australian actors because his theory, it's a combination of things. One, it's a fact that in England, at least, they're trained better. You know, they're more serious about their training. So, you know, you hold the Shakespearean thing.
Sure. I could argue that. I could believe that, yeah.
In Australia, he says the men are more manly. Because, you know, you're in the outback and you got to be tough. And you
Because the entire country's trying to kill
exactly,
you.
Exactly, yeah. Right. And he said, in this country, your stars, especially your younger stars, are so worried about their public image, their social media image, what they look like in their selfies and their pictures and the hoo-da-hoo-da-ba-da, that they're not focused on their craft. it takes away from their skill as actors, and they're not getting their parts.
Interesting.
Because they're too focused on their marketing.
That's really interesting, because, of course, the old studio system, that's what the studio did that for you.
Yeah.
But the studio also owned you.
Yeah. Exactly. You had a contract. You played so many parts.
Right.
So many movies. And
you,
and,
yeah. And turning down a role could get you in a world of pain.
Yeah.
There are many interesting, there's so many great Hollywood stories about people who turned down roles and then they were like, okay, but you're going to play the role in this one.
United Artists started because you had a bunch of actors that wanted to do it differently.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And look what has become of them now.
Yeah.
Well, the model changes so much, and I think that unfortunately for a lot of these, and in fairness to the especially the younger actors, this is the world they're living in. I mean, they don't really have. It's not really something they get to. We are so used to things coming at us so quickly,
mm-hmm.
and fame is fleeting.
Yeah,
15. You know, the 15 minutes of fame thing turned out to be pretty close. Because you can have a star, somebody who's like, oh, this is the huge, huge star. And then
breakout.
And then a year later, you know, it's like, oh, there has been. It's like
how many movies, pick your actor. Katherine Heigl.
Oh, sure.
Bang, bang, bang. I mean, she did 3 or 4 or 5 different ones all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Seth Rogen.
Mm-hmm.
Was doing, you know, 3 or 4 or 5. Ron Berg was directing, you know, however many he was doing.
Sure.
John Favreau. Now, mm-hmm. And, you know, most recently it's been Benedict Cumberbatch.
Right.
Is in everything. Chris
sure.
Pratt for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, when did we start casting the same 5 actors in every part, every movie.
But also bear in mind that, again, we had, in the old studio system, we actually got that a lot too. But we also had much fewer films actually going out. And films mm-hmm. played in theaters longer.
Yeah.
And so you're hoping for, what, maybe a month of really solid...
Something like that, month or 6 weeks, and then after I think it's a 2 month window now, a 3 month window before it hits home video,
something like that, or VOD on the day of release.
It's crazy.
But so it's a completely different model than it used to be,
mm-hmm.
and so we remember back then, you know, Clark Gable was in this movie and this movie and this movie, and James Dean was in this movie and this movie and this movie.
Right, but Clark Gable was always playing Clark Gable.
Well, that's true.
It was like John Wayne. Well, John Wayne was always John Wayne. It didn't matter what he was
in. Right, but the thing is that that's, you know, when you had that big star at your studio, you know, you put them out in the film year after year after year after year. And
right.
So you would get, you know, every year was a new John Wayne movie. You know, or quicker than that in some cases, because they used to crank this up. Or Humphrey Bogart would put out, you know, how many, actually, in the Bogart days, you were cranking out maybe 2 or 3 or 4 films a year.
Yeah. And they were always marketed as a Humphrey Bogart picture.
Oh, sure.
Clark Gable film.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't really, you weren't going necessarily, I mean, you were going to see the kind of movie it was.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was a romantic comedy, it's a Clark Gable romantic comedy. And you'd be like, okay, and you were going to, and didn't need to know more than that, because you knew what you were getting. I mean, you weren't getting these, I think especially in the post-World War II days, we were looking for a certain amount of stability, of this is the kind of thing I'm going to get.
Yeah, familiarity.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, it's like City on the Edge of Forever, when mm-hmm. When they're walking down the street in Mayberry.
Mm-hmm.
And Edie Keithler says, you know, there's a new Clark Gable picture. And it's not even, you know, you don't even have a title.
Right.
The way she's talking about it.
Oh, sure.
The new Clark Gable picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was probably more common, that you knew the movie as the Clark Gable picture.
Oh, sure. Or you went to a Bogart movie or a Danny Kaye film or a Clark Gable picture. Yeah, it's it was a very different. We ingested our entertainment differently,
mm-hmm.
And then TV became what it became.
And then they took over Comic Con.
And they took over Comic Con. Wait a minute. You mean Comic Con started as something involving not media?
No. No, it's always been about media, right?
Okay,
it's
sure.
always been about Hollywood.
Right. Well, you know, and That has its pros and cons. Oh God, that was not meant to be a pun. Oh, I'm sorry, folks. I gotta go. I'm sorry. I feel
well,
bad.
You're only on your first cup of coffee That's tonight, true. So.
Yeah, well, it becomes this you know debate that we've talked about on this show before, and we'll talk about again whether or not it's a good thing. That, in fact, we just did a Rogues Gallery. We're talking about bubbles bursting, the whole of explosion of
all the DC Comics stuff.
Well, the mainstream effect of the genre. I mean, comic book movies is right. You know, for years and years and years we lived in the shadows. Bright light frightened us,
you know,
and we scurried.
It might not be a bad idea for us to go back to that, because
well,
I think mainstreaming the geek culture has, I don't know that in and of by itself it's a cause, but I think when you mainstream a niche market, you get people from outside that market who are now wanting to be part of it in this
well,
particular
sure.
case. They want to be genre fans. They want to be geeks. They want to be, you know, they want to fit in this crowd. And it's now more likely that you're going to have people, you're going to have all of the schisms and the splits and the socio-political stuff filtering in that we probably didn't have as much of before, because we were all united in our oppression, right?
Well, okay,
you know,
sure, yeah.
We're all being pounded on because we're geeks.
Right.
We're being picked on the playground because we like Spider-Man and Captain Kirk and whatever, right?
Yeah.
So all of us had a common enemy in the bully.
Yeah, right, right.
Right?
Sure.
Now, not so much. You know, the geeks have inherited the earth, and now we're fighting each other. We're fighting amongst ourselves.
Well,
and there's more of that than there used to be.
Well, I think it's a little more public. It's on a bigger scale because, again,
we have the internet too. So.
Well, Well, of course, and the internet is again, yes. It's a room full of people, and the loudest ones are the ones you hear.
Yes,
and
they sound like monkeys.
They also, yeah, this is very true.
Throwing their poo.
As someone who is just fascinated by the current political silly season, I have made the mistake of late. Of reading comment sections on opinion pieces, and it's just amazing.
I have totally shut down on any of that.
I
have pulled a bunch of stuff off my Facebook. I'm in the process of closing off my Facebook account.
Mm.
You know, I'm deleting a bunch of stuff.
Right.
And I went through last year and cleared out a lot of all of these personal comments. The only thing that I'm using it for. Pretty, you know, I'd say 95% of the time right now is business marketing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, either promoting Sci-Fi for me or
sure.
promoting my media company or whatever.
Right.
And I'm not doing anything else.
Mm.
I'm not, you know, every now and again I'll throw something in
oh,
there,
sure.
just
oh,
some
course.
Comment or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm finding that I'm restraining myself a lot more on social media. I mean, I hardly ever use my personal Twitter account. I'm on the Sci-Fi for Me Twitter account posting
right,
for Sci-Fi
sure.
for Me. Uh-huh. You know, that's work.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else, I'm just closing it down because I hate this stuff anyway. you know, and it's one of those things. I'm like, I really do feel like I'm out of place because
well.
You know, and it's really it's an interesting disconnect for me because I grew up watching Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a science fiction guy. I love reading all this stuff, all this whiz-bang technology and gee willikers and all this great stuff, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I hate using it because I see what it I see what it's done to us.
Well, and I think you end up with this with a human beings, I think, have a certain amount of, as a species, an addictive personality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we are, and actually to tie into the flooding of the world with the geek culture, which isn't even really a thing, but
it will be.
You hear about this stuff, okay?
Yeah.
There's just these grand sweeping statements of geek culture or, you know, mm-hmm. you know, genre fans, as if there's only one genre. By the way, folks, film noir, westerns, and romances are genres as well, by the way. So actually, when one says one is a genre fan, and we've said it on the show too, it's kind of like, which one?
Well, narrow it down. I think it's gotten to be publicly accepted that when you say genre, you're always talking about either the science fiction or horror.
Right,
because I think if you're a Western fan, you're a Western fan.
Right,
you know,
right.
Everybody else...
Well, that's because horror, romance fan. Horror and science fiction and fantasy were always kind of the...
All the same kind of thing with the supernatural.
Well, and they were all just kind of like over there, you know? I mean, it's like when the... It was a big deal in the 80s when we had the horror explosion,
mm-hmm.
okay? Because it was suddenly these films are everywhere.
And I think somebody calling it genre was probably the hoity-toity looking.
Oh yes, it was not. It was not a compliment.
No.
It was not a compliment. But
I mean, we've embraced it since then. But
sure. But I mean, also bear in mind that mystery novels at one point were sneered at.
Yeah. Right.
And so it becomes this interesting thing where the culture changes and we look more at. We've got a TV show called Penny Dreadful, which is one of the more interesting. Fantasy / horror shows on TV,
right?
And it's named after what were considered to be extremely disreputable, cheap, tawdry, scandal based, you know, blood soaked tales of penny sheets, Penny Dreadful. You know, they're called Penny Dreadfuls because they cost a penny.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's, you know, but it becomes a thing where a lot of the things that we looked at that were like looked down upon, that's not proper literature. Well, actually, can I present to you Dune or Foundation or Hyperion or you know, I Am Legend or you know, that sort of thing. Of course, you know, I Am Legend from the guy who gave us The Incredible Shrinking Man. So.
Takes all kinds.
It does indeed. And so, you know, Ray Bradbury. I mean, so this is, a lot of this stuff is literature, but it's been an interesting road to get us there.
Yeah.
To have this kind of storytelling be
speaking of which,
viewed positively. Yes.
Have you seen, and I know I mentioned Dayton Ward earlier, he's posted something else, a mention on the Star Trek website for the 50th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
Later this year, it appears as if Simon & Schuster is going to bring back Strange New Worlds.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That'll be cool.
Yeah. We're excited about that.
That's very cool.
James and I brought him down and I showed him. I said, do you want to work on a story? Do you want to write a Star Trek novel, a Star Trek story? And he got so excited. He wanted to bring Khan back. I was like, no, Khan is dead. He's not. No, Khan is dead. And he started trying to figure out how the Genesis Wave could have revived Khan. I was like, No.
He was
Khan was dead before it exploded.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he was not doing well. And it's okay. It's okay to let your villain be dead.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, and state it.
And state it. That's true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yeah, I think we're looking at that. But you talk about, you know, the media, you know, the geek culture and you know, Hollywood and all of this. I mean, San Diego Comic-Con has been the mecca.
Oh, yeah,
for a long time, mm-hmm. And you know, there is that discussion now still, and even more recently, the last couple of years, but in the last few weeks. I've seen a number of comments and articles and little blogs and journals and stuff questioning whether or not it makes sense for the comic book people to even be at Comic-Con anymore. Because Hollywood has gotten to be so dominant, you know, with the television shows and the movies.
Sure.
But somebody was writing had written a letter to BBC
mm-hmm.
about their booth placement in San Diego. Because apparently, BBC, which was very heavily promoting Doctor Who,
mm-hmm.
which is a quote-unquote children's show,
mm, yeah, well.
Was in the middle of the booths for AMC, which was promoting The Walking Dead all weekend.
Sure.
And I think HBO or one of the others, I don't remember which one, but apparently you had the BBC in between blood and gore and guts and scary stuff, and this person said, you know, they were there with their 9-year-old,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, they went to the BBC booth, and of course were exposed to all of the zombie stuff,
mm.
and the 9-year-old had nightmares for a week because of all of this. And of course, you know, you get the adult stuff.
Sure.
You know, the sexy, racy adult stuff is off on its own little place, right. off on the side.
Sure.
And, you know, she's writing to the, well, she, not to the BBC, she wrote to the San Diego, the Comic-Con people.
Okay.
About booth placement. You know, you need to be a little bit more considerate about where you place things because kids are going to see stuff.
Okay, sure, okay.
And that fired off a whole string of comments and conversations about how relevant Comic-Con is for certain audiences anymore. You know, the fact that you can walk in there and not see everything. You know, it sold out in 10 seconds.
Sure.
130,000 tickets mm-hmm. are sold like that.
Right.
And you don't get to experience what Comic-Con was supposed to be for in the beginning.
Oh, you know what? I can definitely see that could be argued. There is a scale question here that is, I mean, you reach the point. We have, you know, Planet Comic-Con here,
mm-hmm.
and it's really, really easy to not see everything.
Yeah.
Now, admittedly,
and we're only 45,000-50,000 people.
Right. So once you reach a certain point, you're kind of like, okay, I'm going to see this and this and this,
yeah.
and everything else is gravy. Remember that afternoon? Was it Saturday afternoon or Sunday afternoon where you and I just wandered around and looked at booths?
Yeah. For the first time in how many years?
It's like I was looking at action figures and going, well, that's really cool. I haven't seen that one before.
Yeah.
And I realized that I was not supposed to be anywhere.
I think it was. I think it was Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I think it was Sunday.
Because we had both been doing panels all weekend, mm-hmm. and we finally had enough help
yeah.
doing everything, running all of the stuff,
just
and you know, cameras.
Away.
And we've yeah, and we're like, where do we need to be?
Exactly.
It's like I know. I feel like I need to be somewhere.
Right. But even if you're just a guest, even if you're just an attendee, mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much to do, so much to see. And you know, say you want to get an autograph of an actor or a performer or a creator, there may be a line. Like
yeah.
you know, when William Shatner was here last year, two years ago. You know, you stood in line,
mm-hmm.
and so that's time we weren't looking at something else. So,
well, yes, how many people spend the night in the Hall H line?
Oh yeah,
I mean that's crazy.
Yeah. Well, so you end up with, you know, you can certainly get a lot out of it. I mean, if you're a Star Wars fan,
mm-hmm.
you know, going to just waiting overnight to be in that panel,
sure,
probably was very, very fulfilling. I would not have minded being there.
Oh no, yeah, no, it would have been great.
So
and of course, I would love to be there on a media pass, where we could actually get in.
Oh, yeah.
to everything that we need to get into
sure.
in order to, you know, say here's what happened
mm-hmm.
at the event.
But even then,
you're not going to be able to see it all.
Yeah, you couldn't be. It'd have to be a team of people.
Yeah,
and which is how you know ideally you'd like to do it anyway. But
and if you're the manager of a company and you would like to sponsor our coverage of next year's San Diego Comic-Con, send us an email.
Yeah, we're not kidding. That's actually
no,
a thing to
that
do.
Would
we're
that gonna, would be a nice thing to
please
do.
Please do that.
Yes.
Well, and I think that, you know, we've had the discussion before whether or not, you know, the artists feeling that perhaps the cosplayers are taking over,
yeah.
and drawing attention. When you look at something like Comic-Con, any Comic-Con where your media is a big thing. You're looking at differences in scale because your TV and movie audiences
mm-hmm.
are bigger than the comic book audiences.
Right.
And so I think that, you know, you're automatically looking at a overpowering in terms of sheer numbers. I mean,
but I would think that, you know, if you're going to do that, there's nothing that says you have to be at Comic-Con.
Oh, sure.
Because, you know, Disney has got their own thing now with D23, and that's where we're going to get all of the Star Wars and the Marvel stuff. They didn't drop a whole lot at San Diego, because they've got their own.
Mm-hmm.
And Image Comics has their own thing that's in San Francisco. It was a week before San Diego. They have 3 or 4 days up there at the Image Expo where they do all of their announcements there.
Sure.
I'm wondering if that might not be the beginning of a trend where if you have things like New York split into two events. You've got the media side, you've got a comics event now. So I'm wondering if it's just a matter of time before San Diego becomes two things.
Oh, it wouldn't surprise me. I think that realistically you're looking at a question of your scale. If you get too big, you become too unwieldy. There's nothing you can do about it. I mean, you're just we can no longer manage this. We cannot manage, how big a space can they move into at this point? Where are they going to go?
They're not. Exactly. That's it. They're stuck.
So you end up splitting up. And that's okay, because I think that it gives the folks a chance who are the comic book fans to be able to focus on that. And if you don't, if you have two cons now and maybe your prices aren't the same, it's like, oh, we're going to charge you what we charged you at the first one for both of these.
It might make it easier to afford the stuff.
Oh, sure.
The action figures and the playsets and the puzzles and everything else.
When you look at that scale, too, you also end up with the fact that the operating costs become that much bigger. And for those of you who may not have thought about this, running a con is a money losing proposition.
Oh yeah.
It is.
Yeah,
have any of them actually been profitable? Do we know?
I'm not privy to any of that, but just from the fringes of conversations that I've been a part of, I think there most events are lucky to break even.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll probably break even. They might make a little bit, but I don't think they're enormously, immensely.
Nobody's
buying Lamborghinis off of this.
None of the people running them.
No.
are making huge amounts of money on this.
Yeah, and the vendors are not making. I mean, they're making enough to justify the cost of being there.
Sure,
they're selling stuff.
Mm-hmm, right,
but I don't think that it's. This is an exposure and marketing thing for most of these guys,
and for a lot of these folks, I mean, it's money well spent.
Yep.
So
speaking of money well spent, you could spend your money well.
That's right.
At superherostuff.com, they are our sponsor here at H2O. We do appreciate their support every week, and it's their fault we do this every week.
Is that what it is?
Well, because
we've got someone to blame.
When they came on board as a sponsor,
they
promoted on their social media that, hey, we're going to be sponsoring the H2O. It's a weekly podcast.
Right, and at that point, you and I were...
and we went...
weekly.
Okay, we'll do it weekly.
We were knocking out about twice a month.
Yeah, I think we were doing every couple of weeks. So that got us on the weekly schedule,
which I think has been good.
Yeah, I think it has. I think it helps us to stay on the timely topics,
right?
So we can talk about things that are happening now, and that leaves our other podcasts for other subjects and topics.
They just have neat stuff over there.
I mean, yeah, just they all... do. Yeah, we just got a bunch of stuff. The Batman bobblehead,
right?
The Star Wars backpack and stuff that we can use the Flash mug, yeah, all sorts of things.
Yeah.
So we do encourage you to check out superherostuff.com. We also are going to hear a message from Atomic Cotton. They make our T-shirts, and we will continue our conversation here on H2O right after this.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Where can you get Age of Ultron stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Justice League stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Doctor Who stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Daredevil stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
New items being added all the time. Get your superhero stuff at superherostuff.com. Plus, the Hero Box is back. $70 worth of superhero stuff for only $49. Superherostuff.com, where heroes shop.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon. Or find them on the web at atomiccotton.com. Atomic Cotton. Shirts and art for fans by fans.
Hi, this is Jason Hunt, and if you're one of the dedicated listeners for this show, first of all, thank you. Second, you are sharing with others, are you not? And you should be aware by now, we have many shows as part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio, our Marvel discussion on Level 117, the DC chat on the Rogues Gallery, Sci-Fi for Chicks talking about various topics, which we also do in mixed company on the Echo Chamber, and H2O, which is our one-on-one discussion between Mr. Harvey and myself, now syndicated over at Amazing Stories Magazine. Sci-Fi for Me Radio is more than one show, and we'd like to invite you to join us for all of it, or at least try it out and see what you think. And also check out Sci-Fi for Me TV. That's our YouTube channel where we have interviews, convention panel video, and Week in Review, where we deliver a digest of the news of the week. All part of giving you the most bang for your buck. Oh yeah, wait, no, it's free. So check it out. Sci-Fi for Me Radio and Sci-Fi for Me TV. All part of SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Sci-Fi for Me Radio, where all of us are madmen in a box.
Back on H2O, Jason Hunt here along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And if you would like to add your two cents to the conversation, we do read each and every comment, every email, which you can send to h2o@scififorme.com. You can also call our hotline, which apparently was broken, but now we fixed it.
Uh-oh.
It was when we changed servers.
Right.
The link was broken.
Mm-hmm,
and it
sure.
kept feeding all the calls into Google Chat instead of the voicemail oh, no. recorder and stuff because the email was broken.
Right, sure.
So we've got that repaired. 573-42 Sci-Fi is the hotline. And also, if you would consider, if I can get my microphone back up where it's supposed to be, we do have a campaign running on Patreon at this point. If you would like to support us with your pocketbook, as it were, there is an opportunity for you to do that as well. It's patreon.com/scififorme. It's kind of like a subscription crowdfunding where you can select a different level of support every month and you can help us do what we do more, better, faster. So, okay, there's the sales pitch. You talk while I drink coffee.
There we go, because you it would be
I don't know what that was.
If you were to expire on the radio. Because we are in the basement, I just leave and lock the door behind me and pretend
but
I was
it would be ratings. Ratings,
<That's>
man.
<true. laughs>
Make sure you take a picture.
It's a podcast. Posted. We're not Posted. Live.
the question has come up a couple of different times of whether or not we need to do some video podcasts. Maybe not necessarily this show, but we could do something that we could post on our YouTube channel that's a podcast format as opposed to the news programs that we were doing. But
right.
And, you know, there's lots of different things that we could do. If we had all the resources, the manpower, and, you know, unlimited time.
If we happened to have those things, we'd rule the world. Or rather, we'd pay someone to rule it for us.
That's right.
Because, I mean, seriously, ruling the world, colossal pain.
Oh, I know. The logistics,
oh,
the red
logistics,
tape.
God.
Can you imagine?
Yo, it'd be, unless you were like, you know, Dr. Doom, in which case, you know, you'd be the whole... You'd have to be the tyrant. You'd have to be the, mm-hmm. because otherwise it would just be literally the paperwork alone.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because you know as editor in chief, there are times when I have to remind myself that I am the one in charge. But you know, this being an all volunteer thing, I'm not going to sit there and go, "You must do," you know, crack the whip or anything, because you know I can't be like that.
True.
Not yet.
I was just saying.
I can do that. I can do that at home because I'm dad. But you know, with you guys, you know.
Yeah, we would just kind of look at you like.
Yeah. Okay.
What are you doing? What are you doing? Wait. What's wrong with you?
Who are you? Yeah.
Are you okay? Are you feeling okay? Do you need to sit down? Would you like some cocoa? You need some cocoa. Yeah,
I need some chocolate. I need a lot more. I need a lot more than chocolate.
Yeah, but chocolate is always a good starting point.
That is, yes, it is.
So yeah, but to get back to our circle back around to Comic-Con, we have another one coming up here in Kansas City too.
Yeah, in just a couple of weeks.
In just a couple of weeks,
and we are going to have a presence there. I don't know what it's going to entail yet, but right. If you're going to be in the area, if you're going to be at Kansas City Comic-Con, August 7th and 8th,
and it's brand new.
Brand new. Bartle Hall, which is the same place that they have Planet Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
Then we are going to be there somehow.
Well, and it's going to be very, very interesting because, again, like we said, it's a question of scale. And so when you have somebody that's just starting out, no matter how well you schedule it, no matter how many people you have booked for it, it's new. And it's a challenge to do. So we're hopeful that it's a success because it's always good to see that kind of thing be successful and to give more people options. One thing that if I had a complaint about Planet Comic-Con is that it has a tendency to be on the same weekend as everything else.
Well, yeah. But of course, like we said earlier, you know, there are things that people like to complain about with these events that, being on the outside, you wouldn't know are issues mm-hmm. on the inside.
Sure.
A little inside baseball, because, you know, we talk about whether or not it's profitable and how, sure. how many mm-hmm. people actually show up at these things. One of the biggest challenges I know for Chris and the Planet Comic-Con people is the fact that they don't have as much control of the venue schedule as they would like.
Oh, sure.
Because Chris goes in and they open up this giant book that's got all the dates.
Mm-hmm.
And you've right. got this date and this date and this date. And, you know, they don't give you unlimited choices. They give you, I think, three
right.
that you can pick mm-hmm. from. And so, the last couple of years, it's been on the same weekend as the basketball tournament.
Right. And the same weekend.
And the same weekend as Naka-Con.
Right, which is the big anime manga convention.
Right. So this coming year, in 2016, is going to be on May 20th instead of March.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that'll alleviate some of that. But, yeah, it's in the middle of May. Who knows how many other conflicts we're going to have.
Right.
And that happens.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You're very rarely going to find yourself in a situation where something isn't conflicting with something else.
Yeah.
We're just having this discussion. we're in the middle of the Kansas City Fringe Festival as we speak here. And both Jason and I are actually working the Fringe Festival a little bit.
A little bit.
And we're overseeing the film programs. And I was having this discussion with Adam, who runs the movie theater that we're screening at. And we were discussing scheduling of events and things like that. And one of the things that he and I ran into last October was we had the director of the Blair Witch Project was in town.
That movie had a director?
It did. Terror on the Plains film festival was in, and the Independent Filmmakers Coalition was also having their Halloween party, all on the same night.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what else was going on that night? The final game of the World Series, which Kansas City was in. So it was basically, it was a wash. Everybody lost to the World Series, which is the way things happen. But the thing that we had been talking about, and he and I talked about it then, we've talked about it several times since, we talked about it again last night, is that we all had these things scheduled on the same night.
Yeah.
And for a group of people who actually like each other across the metro, and we talk to each other fairly regularly, it's one of those things you can end up with, well-meaning people undercutting the other person by scheduling.
Oh, sure.
With.
Yeah, and it's so, just and those things happen. Now, Kansas City Comic Con, Colin Baker is going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Astin.
Right.
Pam Grier.
Yes.
Manu Bennett.
Yes.
Christian Narn.
Hodor. Oh, okay, yeah.
Hodor. Adrian Paul, Cassinia Solo, Austin St. John. Mm-hmm. Of course, you got to have a Power Ranger at any of these.
Sure.
And Serena Vincent, also a Power Ranger. So some of the, I mean, we're going to have Nalini Krishan from Star Wars Episode 2.
Mm. Okay, yeah.
And Trina Nishimura, who's a voice on Attack on Titan.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And we've got Orly Shoshan from Episode 3.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick Howland from Lost Girl. And Cass Anvar, who's on The Expanse, which is going to hit Sci-Fi
soon. Which the early reviews have been very, very positive for.
Well, so that's on the media side of things. Mm-hmm. The creator side, Jason Arnett's going to be here. Jason Aaron, of course, is going to be here. Dane Ault, Jacob Baer, Ed Bickford, Terry Beatty, Colleen Boyd, Dave Bryant, Elizabeth Bunce, C.W. Cook, who's got a new book called Solitary. That
we
he's
like
been
C.W. Cook.
On. Let's see, who else? Steve Daniels.
Oh, okay.
Who else? Matt Fox, Brian Fife, Michael Golden.
Oh, yes.
Will be here. Jeremy Hahn, Phil Hester, Dennis Hopeless. And I thought that I saw not only Dennis Hopeless, but also his old writing partner, Kevin Mellon.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. Dennis Hopeless, the writer, Kevin Mellon, the artist.
Right.
Kevin, of course, now working on Archer.
Right.
As a storyboard artist. But Kevin and Dennis got started together. And they're both from here. And Dennis is going to be there. Who else? Cameron Kiefer. Konstantin Komardin. Russian Judge Dredd.
Oh, yeah.
Judge Dredd and Agency. So it's a good solid lineup. Aunt Lucia is going to be here.
Right.
He's a figure designer, I guess is what he's best known for now. Tony Moore, Kevin Nolan, James O'Barr.
Right.
Andy Parks. And Jim Shooter.
Jim Shooter's really going to be here?
Jim Shooter's going to be here. Saturday and Sunday only. Jim Shooter's going to be here. That'll be fun.
That'll be fun.
If we can get an interview with him.
Kyle
Strom's going to be here. Kansas City Comic Con is going to be a pretty interesting weekend. I think it's gonna turn out pretty well. So that's coming up here in the next couple of weeks.
Oh yeah, because we
have to figure out what we're going to do for it. Because I don't know what we're going to do for it yet.
Well, if nothing else, we could. The worst case scenario is we just go to the con.
Well, we are. I am told we're going to get a table.
I'm just saying, worst case scenario, we've been talking about the con.
Yeah, we've been talking about getting a table.
We could go to the con and then tell people what we saw at the con.
Which is something we do anyway.
I know, but right? I mean, we just as opposed to having a table and.
I think we should probably record some podcasts out there while we're.
You know what? I think we should. I think that would actually be a really good idea.
And get some people, some guests.
Oh yeah.
Do a couple of echo chambers or whatever.
That'd be fantastic.
So, San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about that, aren't we?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Comic-Con culture, just in general, has like we were saying earlier, it has evolved. There are a lot more people showing up at these things that are not your typical standard mom's basement geek types.
But you know what? The mom's basement geek type hasn't really
that's
been...
That's always been a misconception.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, when you think about it, the folks who were widely considered to be the geeks are the ones who were interested in science and this sort of thing. That's the reason the geeks are ruling the world right now. It's because of the technology.
Yeah.
And the folks who were Star Trek fans and Star Wars fans and Asimov fans and all those things way back when, the short couple of decades ago that this stuff was always really breaking out. So yeah, I mean, it's still a perception that's, but you know, again, we come back to the fact that the general pop culture exposure of this with things like, you know, the fans of Robert Downey Jr., the people who've paid to go watch Iron Man movies does not necessarily translate into Iron Man comic book sales.
No.
Or Avengers comic book sales, or Hulk comic book sales, or Black Widow comic book sales.
Right.
The good news is that the voice of those 20,000, 30,000, 50,000, 60,000 fans who are the regular purchasers of the average issue of a comic. Because that's really about the numbers, isn't it? It's about 50?
I don't even know if it's that many.
Maybe. But if you think about it, that's a really tiny number.
Mm-hmm.
In comparison to, say, ticket sales.
Right.
But, you know, those folks have a voice that you can hear now.
And I like the fact that, for the most part, we'll say, especially on the Marvel side, but for the most part, we're getting material now that's fairly faithful to the source material.
Sure.
Unlike what you'd have before.
Oh, goodness. And yes. Dolph Lundgren is the Punisher.
Yeah, well, but...
well, it was a different time.
I mean, there's still the whole women in comics discussion to be had, you know, women in comic book movies.
But that's but it's a discussion that's being had.
I mean, and I'm not saying it shouldn't. I'm just saying that still is, you know, it's trending behind the curve, as it were, in terms of, you know, where the discussion is on the print side of things within the comics community,
mm-hmm.
and where that discussion is. Just as a whole, in general, they're in two different places.
Within the
at
comics
this point.
Community, there's an advantage in that there are female creators who are, you know, they've established themselves and established a following.
Yeah,
I mean, you're not going to have a lot of, and again, because you're looking at what ultimately is a much smaller audience on the printed page,
mm-hmm.
versus the box office. You may not recognize those names outside of the comic world, but there's a very strong female presence especially on the writing and editorial side, and certainly some other amazing artists.
I think it would be interesting to see, maybe not a Batgirl movie, but a DC Comics movie written by Gail Simone.
You know what?
Although nobody outside the comics community would know, it would know why it would be something worth watching if it was a Gail Simone script.
You're right. But I think that also the fact that you would have this, because that would be a news story in itself. That would be.
I mean,
that,
people inside the comics community would just blow up about it.
Oh yeah, but that's your entry point for the folks outside.
Yeah.
Is this is a big deal, and that becomes a news story, and this mm-hmm. has become interviews and things like that. This is how you get publicity, and the people on the outside sit there and go,
And Gail Simone doesn't have to write the Wonder Woman script. Gail Simone doesn't have to write Black Widow.
Right.
Gail Simone can write a comic book movie.
Right.
I don't care what it is.
Oh yeah.
You know, it doesn't necessarily, because I still have. It just makes my teeth grind that we are in this place now where if you've got a female lead superhero movie, for whatever reason, only a woman could direct it. Only a woman could produce it.
Well,
only a woman could write it.
I think that
doesn't serve the discussion any more than somebody sitting there saying misogyny. You know, I mean, either side of that argument, you get the best person who can do the best job.
Oh, sure, but I think the thing is that because it's become part of the larger discussion, because we're not only are we looking at the fact that we don't have a
because then it just becomes about quotas.
Well, yeah,
and that's not fair to anybody either.
Well, you're right, but at the same time, it also is we're at that point now where we're looking not only at the fact that. The studios and the toy companies tend to be ignoring the fact that 50% of their nearly 50% of their audience is female.
52, according to Ashley Eckstein.
Well, there you go. So let's say half, give or take, within a margin of error, half of your audience is male, half of your audience is female. Don't ignore half your audience. That's just right. That's just good business. But the thing is that we're also at that point where we're looking at things like the entertainment industry, which is and has been for a very, very, very long time, has been very, very white male dominated. Now, that's just the way of the world. And but one of the things that has become a big discussion on that, on the entertainment side of the thing, on the behind the scenes,
right?
Because a lot, you know, who's in front of the camera, that's a marketing standpoint, really. I mean, you look at some of the,
but there is a discussion on that front too, because you look at the discussion about Akira.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to make a new version of Akira. And it's going to be set in Manhattan, and right. The cast is going to be all white. It was like, no! Right, don't do that to Akira.
We made that movie. It was called Chronicle. And if you do Akira, you do Akira. In which case, you can't. You well, and if you can, you shoot it in Japan. You shoot it in Tokyo.
Yeah.
Because you use a Japanese cast, because some stories. It's like, okay, if you're going to do a story about the American Revolution, it's probably not a good idea to shoot it in Romania.
But it's cheaper.
True. And actually, I just tripped myself up there, because some of that architecture is the American Revolution would be European architecture, and a lot of the older European, okay, maybe you do shoot it in Romania. But the thing is
Prague.
But you're not going to cast Romanian actors who can't do American accents. If they can do American accents and they're cheap, then you do. Yeah. So welcome to economics.
Exactly.
But the thing is
that... Yeah, because American actors are too busy taking selfies.
Well, we've noticed.
According to Michael Douglas.
Well, there you go. But I think
he's right, though. I think he hit the nail on the head
I also think that they're kind of trapped right now, too, because that's what everybody expects of them. And if they're not keeping their face out there, if they're not keeping that social profile, they run the risk of being passed up, because it is such a bam, 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 bam.
Well, see, and I keep, you know, we've talked about the fact that we need a social media manager.
Yeah, we do.
To concentrate a little bit more full time on running all of our stuff, because we have Twitter and Instagram and Tumblr and Pinterest and all that, and Pinterest is pretty easy to manage, because we've moved it all into cosplay. It focuses on cosplay, sure. So we got tutorials and we got photo galleries. It's easy to do, and. You know, and I look at the Instagram account, for example, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, what do we put there? what do we populate Instagram with? Because I'm not going to take a bunch of pictures of myself.
No, that's
who wants to see that?
That's the stuff.
I take a picture of the dog every now and then. Right. We've got our Monday morning mugshot with the coffee mugs and the staff and whatnot. But I'm thinking, but that's a gimmick. And I'm thinking, okay, what other I'm thinking in terms of gimmicks,
right?
And I find myself, going down that rabbit hole of what gimmicks can we use, and then I think, are we at that point now, not just us, but society as a whole, where all of our marketing of a product or a service or a movie or whatever centers around a gimmick or a personality or some shtick that doesn't necessarily have any substance to it. And some people, some people have drawn that distinction around Comic-Con events now, that it's all flash and it's all hype and it's all, there's no meat on the bones. It's all just the glitter and the fancy ribbons and shiny. And you're not getting a whole lot in terms of really substantial information or stuff.
Okay, well, you know what? And I think you could argue very much that, yes. that's an argument.
Too long didn't read. Yes.
Yes. But yeah. It becomes this, it's a cyclical thing, though. I think when, again... When fans demand more to it, they're going to get more to it. You know, it's they're going to vote with their monies.
Yeah.
And I think that the thing that the studios have failed to grasp is that when half of your money is coming from women, they can withhold that money mm-hmm. and not go to the if you're not giving what they want, they're not going to go. And that's important. I think that's an important thing for everybody who's producing this content for a big audience is to remember is that it's a crowded field.
Yeah.
And you know Kendall Sin over on our Rogues Gallery is concerned that the whole field is so crowded that it's going to burst. The bubble's going to burst. Mm-hmm. And the thing about Comic Cons or cons in general is that you're going to reach a saturation point where there's too many cons or they're too big.
Yeah.
And people are just not going to go.
Well, they're going to get big enough that you're going to have cellular mitosis. You're going to get them splitting in half like New York did. That's the only way you're going to stay viable.
Sure,
really, but with the crowds that you're getting.
But you're also going to have to balance your costs to the people. You don't want to end up like going to see a concert anymore. Okay, because concert tickets are $250,
something like that.
For some cases, I mean,
there's one of the radio stations here in town that was promoting a four pack.
Van Halen.
$79 for four.
Yeah,
which is not a bad price.
No, it's a great price.
I mean, lawn seating.
However, if it tells you a little bit about the marketing going on, because if you think about it, the Rolling Stones just played here in town,
mm-hmm.
and those tickets were much much more expensive.
Yes.
Than four for $80. And like
I thought for about that long. I went on to the Ticketmaster thing to see about the package and the, you sure. know, the four pack uh-huh. and whatnot. It's lawn seating, okay, fine. But by the time you end up with all of your fees and everything else, mm-hmm. you're not spending $80, you're spending closer to $150.
Oh sure, of course.
And then I thought to myself, well, who would I take? Because who would I take? I mean, the kid would love to go, but I'm not sure that I would take a 13-year-old to a Van Halen concert. You might, could, maybe, but...
Well, okay, yeah, okay. Bear in mind that what was racy and shocking... And,
I know,
and,
I know.
And, it's, in it's the a, 80s.
Yeah, I know, like, I know, but...
Isn't that cute?
But, there's still some things... Yeah, you know, not necessarily the music or the performances, but the environment.
Oh sure.
You know, like you have to think about those kinds.
The environment of the Van Halen fans are our age.
I know.
And older.
I know. But I'm just saying, you know, these are things that go through your head.
I know.
Because your kid's older, so right. you know you've already gone through this kind of thing.
Sure.
But, I mean, you know, but then I thought. Okay, well, what about the other two tickets? If I got the four.
My kid just published a book, by the way.
I saw that. Congratulations. Yeah, that's a cool thing. But yeah, who would I take? If I took the kid, you get two more tickets. Who would I take?
Sure.
I'm not married. Don't have a girlfriend. I'm not dating anyone.
I'd go see Van Halen with you.
I'm not going to take you on a date.
Fine. I see how you are. Build up a boy's hopes and crash him to the ground.
That's what I do. So anyway, yeah, but that was, I thought that was interesting. Yeah, it was not a bad price, but yeah, but you're right. We are getting to that point where something's going to have to change.
Oh yeah, it can't. You
and
can't,
it's not a cultural thing; it's a business model. That
right, you
is
can't. You
evolving
can't maintain that kind of. And literally, if you're moving, we just did Kansas City Maker Faire mm-hmm. a few weeks ago here,
yep.
and they moved about 18,000 people through Kansas City's Union Station,
and it was the biggest event that they've had.
Right,
Biggest Maker Faire they've had so far.
And Maker Faire is a huge, huge deal here in KC, and I guess we've got really, really fantastic numbers compared to a lot of Maker Faires around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, you know, Kansas City, not actually flyover country, folks. Things happen here. It's true. Things happening. And we actually, the film community actually participated in it for the first time. And it was a very interesting experiment. And I think we're going to repeat it next year with some definite tweaks, I think is the plan. But it was a lot of people moving past you every day.
Yeah.
And some people stopped and some people kept moving, and that's just the way of these things. But when you're on the inside looking out, it's hard to get the scale. When you're on the outside looking in, you sit there and look at these giant, giant crowds. But when you're sitting there at your table, it actually is not that easy to realize how many people are walking past you. You just know there's a lot.
Right.
You don't have that sense of scale. And, you know, in Union State, there's room to grow there, I think, for a bigger Maker Faire, but only so much room because Union Station's, it's a big building, but it's not that big. Something like that, you know, if you could move over to Bartle Hall or something like that.
Yeah, you could eventually.
You know, but the thing is that, you know, again, you know, you're going to max out on the size of your thing. So, yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens with some of this because you're going to have to break down into smaller, more focused con. Maybe it is just a comic book con. Maybe it is just a media con, hopefully that's the best of both worlds, I think. And you get something because you're going to have crossover. You're going to have the folks who you know, you're going to have folks who go to the movies who've never read a Iron Man comic before and go, well, check out that Iron Man comic or Guardians of the Galaxy or things like that. It's because I mean a lot of the comic book stuff actually is influenced by the film stuff. I mean, the Guardians of the Galaxy comic book, Star-Lord in the comic book looks an awful lot like his Chris Pratt incarnation versus the one prior to the movie.
Yeah.
And that's just good marketing, too. That's just the nature of it. But you can play with that stuff, so.
Yeah, and that's like Nick Fury.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Nick Fury Jr., mm-hmm. Ultimate Nick Fury, was designed and to look like mm-hmm. Samuel L. Jackson.
Right.
And guess who ends up playing him in the movies? Hey, it's Samuel L. Jackson. It's kind of serendipitous, isn't it?
Wait, are you telling me that there was some, like, give and take there and some crazy talk?
Yeah.
Well, no, yeah. And I think that...
I want Samuel L. Jackson to play me in the movie about us, about this site.
Well, you know what? I think he's already got the goatee,
I still get hair. I still have hair. I don't have an eye patch.
Samuel Jackson in real life does not have an eye patch.
What?
It's true.
I've just had all of my dreams shattered.
You just want someone to play you who looks cool with an eye patch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you want to be a pirate. When you grow up.
I don't know that I'm ever going to grow up.
And that's the way it should be.
That's right.
We're fans of speculative fiction. They're by necessity that we'll always have the imagination of a child, which is the way it's supposed to work.
You would hope.
Well, you know, I think so. Yeah. I think even you with your staring at technology and going, Why must you vex me so?
I stare at technology sideways.
Exactly.
Yes.
Even you, with your sideways stare at the thing you are, as Jason sits in front of a laptop computer right now, doing things that are, you know. But it's even that there's still a sense of wonder. There's still a sense of what we can do with this stuff. I mean, you and I. I think quieter than some folks, we're geeking out bad over all the Pluto stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Just,
this is fun.
This is
a great time.
It's like, wow. I mean, and there was just so much information coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And for all the fact that, you know, and it was weird because, of course, we've got this the stuff coming out of San Diego.
Yeah.
And there's the stuff coming out of NASA.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. What's happening with Pluto?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
oh, that's a trailer. I'll watch that later.
But how many times were you looking at the stuff from Pluto and thinking about V'ger?
Oh, there were so many things I was thinking of because
I'm like this is how this happens. This is where this starts. You know, it's not Voyager 6,
right?
But you know, New Horizons could be Voyager 6.
Sure.
Really, because it's the one that's going to leave.
Right.
I mean, Voyager's on its way out.
Mm-hmm.
Where's Voyager 2? Is Voyager 2 crossing? Where is that?
Oh, wow.
Voyager 2 is, we'd have to look it up. I think Voyager 1 and 2 are close to crossing the threshold.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they are.
And then,
yeah.
And then New Horizons is going out, mm-hmm. too. And we're going to have three different probes out mm-hmm. there out beyond the solar system.
You heard about that Russian, the guy with all the Russian money. The guy, he's like incredibly rich.
No.
And he has just decided that he's going to give a billions of dollars fund SETI.
I did come across
there was
that.
There was a guy on NPR, a scientist on NPR talking about that, and he was almost giddy. He was controlled, but you could hear these like little bits of things because it's like that's like 10 years worth of funding.
All of these people with their rich Uncle Ottos, it's great for them. I'm still waiting to find our rich Uncle Otto.
I've met all my uncles, and none of them are named Otto, and none of them are rich.
See, you know.
But it's a neat thing because here we've got these probes.
I'd even be happy with a rich Aunt Gladys.
Oh well, see, you know,
either way, it doesn't.
Actually, might actually have Aunt Gladys. I don't think she's rich though. They're going to be because I think what we've looked at. Oh God, I can't remember what the percentages is, but it's going to like.
Oh, we're going to be looking at Pluto stuff for.
Well, no, but I mean, I can't remember the Russian gentleman's name, but they're talking about expanding to like 200 times the part of the sky they're going to be looking at.
Cool.
Because they have the money now.
Yeah.
And he was just like, I've made all this money. This is what I want to do with it. I want to see if there's anything out there. And scientists are sitting there going, I'm sorry.
How much?
Are you Santa?
Yeah, right.
Because I think it's Christmas, and you really want to fund this? And he's like, yeah. And they're like, wow, okay, science?
Yeah.
You want to give us money? We'll go do science.
Yeah, here, go science something.
Go science something. Go science the universe, and which is fantastic. Now, we just need someone like that to come along and throw a little more money into the manned programs.
Well, what was I seeing the other day? The European Science Agency is planning a manned lunar shot.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the process of designing a mission to put a base on Mars.
Sure.
Not Mars, on the moon.
Well, you got to get that footprint back. You got to get that foothold up there.
It's crazy times.
Well, I mean,
you know who's not making those plans?
Well, yeah, I know. Well, okay, but the thing, yeah, what we need is another. We don't need the space race, because the space race was. I mean, it's we need another visionary, who knows. We've got, Neil deGrasse Tyson can get out there and talk about science, and he can popularize it, and he's been an amazing force.
He makes it fun and interesting.
He's been an amazing force for that and engaging people on that.
Yep.
But we need somebody like him who is going to champion getting off the planet.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that, and we can't ask him to do that. I mean, I'm sure we can sit there and say, Neil, you want to do this? And he'd be like, yeah, I'd love to do this. But he's got, we can't. It can't all rest on his shoulders. He's a nice guy. He's very, very smart. His shoulders look like they're pretty sturdy. That's not fair, But we need somebody like that who can get out there. And we see a little bit of that with SpaceX, right?
Yeah.
But we need more. We need somebody who is, come follow me to the stars.
Let's go to space.
We need a Harriman.
Yeah.
From Heinlein. We need a what's his name from Star Trek? Crap, just completely blew out the name.
Robert April.
Well, yeah, you definitely use a Robert
Archer?
April. We need a invented the warp drive.
Oh, Zefram Cochrane.
We need a Zefram Cochrane.
Yeah.
Somebody who's going to sit there and depending on which version you get, you combine the two from the idealist from the TV show to the man behind the myth out of the movie, mm-hmm. which was actually a pretty nifty deconstruction of the myth of history.
Although you can still reconcile those two,
because course you can.
The man dealing with the myth
mm-hmm.
is the one what left Earth
right.
to get away from all of that.
Sure.
And that's who we ended up seeing in the series.
Right. But I think that because we are at that point right now, I think we're maybe not there yet. But we're kind of primed for that because we are the genre fans have exploded. We're out there, and we care about this stuff. And for crying out loud, Sci-Fi Channel is bringing back science fiction programming.
Who'd have thunk it?
I mean, you know, clearly it's time to take over the universe, because, you know, when is it going to be better? The channel that...
And who better? And who better to be in the forefront of that than us?
Well, I would agree.
Because, one, we're not owned by a big corporate conglomerate giant thing with
true
politics as our agenda.
We have completely failed to publish a story to retract shouldn't retract and just sit there and go, we're leaving it up and we were wrong.
Yeah.
That would have been, yeah. Not going to mention any
well, because I said, you know, that should be our new slogan.
Exactly.
You know, we're not. but, you know, I mean, our site started when you had the whole discussion of the fact that Sci-Fi Channel had abandoned their core audience. And I think that if we were to find our audience, I mean, we have our voice.
Sure.
We've got our presence. We've got our personality on, you know, even though it's mostly minded as dull and boring, you know, we do have a particular style of covering things and all of our podcasts and whatnot. We just need more people to know that we're here. And I think that you're right. I think there is a definite opportunity now more than ever for sites like ours, mm-hmm. you know, not just us, but just all of us,
sure,
to gain that momentum in popularizing space exploration and, you know, going to Mars and exploring Pluto, mm-hmm. and but not Europa.
No landings here.
Yes, but yeah, I think we are poised to do some really great things when it comes to the space program. You just got to do it.
Yeah. Well, and it becomes that. I hate to say it all falls down to one personality, mm-hmm. but historically it kind of has. There has to be that one person who gets up there and says, "This is what we're gonna do,"
yeah,
and sweeps everybody else up with it. And in a perfect world, or even in an optimistic world, that's a good person. History is full of bad people doing that too, but we're at that point now where the right person could come along and really push us into the things that we could have, if we had not lost the momentum after going to the moon. We could have been on Mars right now.
We could have been. I remember seeing an interview with Buzz Aldrin on Nightline on ABC News long time ago.
Sure.
It was one of the anniversaries of the moonshot. And he said that if the space program had stayed on its original timeline, mm-hmm. we would have had an operational base on Mars by 1980. Now, I don't know how much of that is exaggeration. It's just he's, you know, Buzz Aldrin's making it sound bigger than it was. But that struck me. When he said that, wow.
I think it's entirely possible, but here's the thing. Think of the technology they would have made it there with.
Yeah. And think of what we got now, and we can't go.
Oh, we can. We just have to want it bad enough.
Yeah.
We just have to want it bad enough.
Yep.
So, you know.
We'll see. We'll have to see what happens. So, okay, on that note, we're gonna close out this episode. If you have your comments, your thoughts... if you would like to help us in our attempt to take over the world, remember we are
help us help you.
We are doing we have a campaign going on over at Patreon, patreon.com/sci-fi-for-me. You can find a link on our website there. And you can send us an email, h2o@sci-fi-for-me.com, or you can leave a comment and let us know what you think about this or any of our conversations that we have over here. And don't forget to check out superherostuff.com.
We like
for
them.
The stuff.
It's
they
so
have
much cool. That's the kind of place you can just spend a long time browsing.
Yeah, you could. Because they've even got some new things. And they brought the Hero Box back, so you can actually buy a collection of stuff. So check them out. And also, if you want to connect with us on social media, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Google+, Tumblr, YouTube. And that's going to do it for us. Tim Harvey.
Always a pleasure, sir.
I'm Jason Hunt. Thank you very much for listening here at Sci-Fi for Me Radio. For the latest headlines, you can go to sci-fi4me.com, and we will be back next week.
This has been a presentation of sci-fi4me.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.